Welcome to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. Let's get today's show started with your host and founder of the BD Academy, Rob Brown.
And welcome to the show. I'm delighted to have with me today Martin Bragg from Creases. Martin, hello to you.
Hey, Rob. How are you, sir?
We're fantastic. And great to have you on the show. For the benefit of people listening that may not have come across you and Creases, tell us a bit about what you do.
We are a single office accountancy firm down in Tunbridge Wells. We work with clients across the sort of Kent, Sussex and London area and further afield, but that's certainly the rump of our clients. And we are a full service accountancy firm doing everything from the compliance work right the way through to the advisory stuff. And it's kind of how we like to think makes us a little bit different.
And how many people are working at Creases now?
We are, I think, 74 as of this morning. We had a new joiner come in this morning.
Wow, it's good. And what's your particular role in the firm?
I'm the head of business development here.
What made you join Creases?
I was working in Abu Dhabi prior to this job and looking for a role to come home to. And I was actually looking for the right firm and the right job. And I spoke to loads of firms in London, which is obviously the large rump of my market. Spoke to Emma Roberts to see. I remember putting the phone down and going and telling my wife, work for that girl.
Yeah. What is it about Creases that makes this culture a little bit different, Martin? Because you've seen a lot of accounting firms and they all look and sound the same, but there seems to be something a little bit different there.
Yeah, that's certainly what we believe and my experience. We've got six partners, two of which are non-client facing. And I was having a conversation with a friend of mine just a few weeks ago who's just about to join PwC. And his view was, well, you know, 30% of your partners don't do client work. That's just wrong. And I don't believe we're a £6 million plus business, and a £6 million plus business needs to be managed properly. If we were advising a business of that size, we would advise them to take the management of that business very, very seriously.
Yeah. It's quite counterintuitive because all partners are fee earners, really, aren't they? In fact, they do the majority of the high-level work, but that's not the case.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, our partners are obviously the experts in the business and the, you know, the final port call on quality and things like that. We also believe very strongly that for us to be kind of firm that our clients want us to be, run ourselves like a business and less like a traditional partnership.
Tell us about Emma Roberts. What's she like as a leader?
She's incredibly inspirational. Like I say, my first conversation with Emma was sort of April 2017. And I came away from that conversation knowing that I really wanted to work for her and work for Creases. She's one of the bravest people I've ever met because at some point, I think it was probably about 4 or 5 years ago, maybe a little longer, she basically walked into all the partners here and said, we should tear up the book and do it all completely differently. And that's the point at which you either get chaired out of the room, get sectioned. That's one of the things I admire most about her.
Yeah. So what, in your opinion, separates the good accounting firms from the great ones?
For me, it's all about the mindset. You know, I think clients assume a level of competence, and frankly, that's what your professional qualifications are there for, can assume competence. But beyond that, it's really difficult for a client to tell a good accountant from a great accountant or an average one from a good one. But what a client can tell really easily is that you return my emails on time, you answer your phone calls, that you've got some personality about your work, that actually I enjoy spending time with you as opposed to dreading spending time with you.
Yeah.
And I think unless you're in sort of the top 1% of advisors in a very niche area, then you have to make sure that your client service is top notch and you have to find a way to set yourself apart from the competition. And the best firms never forget.
What does good client service look like for you?
Well, I'm a huge believer that every client has the right to feel like they're in a niche of one.
Okay.
Yeah. But there are certain fundamentals that underpin that. And, you know, a lot of that comes down to the making sure you respond to people on time. But also, you know, we talk a lot about being a proactive firm. But in a very practical sense, that has to mean that we make more phone calls out to clients than clients make into us.
Right.
You know, and it's about understanding those sorts of things. Because I think client service, as I mentioned, when the big things are equal, the little things really matter.
I like that. What does niche feel like?
Yeah, well, it should feel like that, a niche of one. So it should feel like the client, you know, that your firm understands me. You know, you see so much feedback in surveys or you speak to clients and I just want my advisors. And that's not just accountants, it's lawyers as well. I want them to understand me and understand my business. What lawyers and accountants have traditionally done, and I think to a very large extent still do, is almost try to industrialize that. You know, how can I get, you know, how can we understand the client's business without me having to actually invest time talking to the client or reading the client's annual reports? Because that's all time that I want to be chargeable elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Whereas from our perspective, it's absolutely fundamental that we talk to the client. If we don't talk to the client, there's no way we can understand them. We can't add as much value as we want.
Do you make any distinction between client service and client experience?
Not entirely sure that I do. You know, the client experience has become very trendy as a phrase. If there is a difference, client service tends to be people talk about the delivery of the work, whereas the client experience should be around everything from how easy it is to park in the office for a client, the coffee tastes in the meeting room, quality of the biscuits, and whether your toilets are clean when they go on the way out.
What's the biggest challenge large firms like yourselves face right now, Martin, particularly if they want to grow?
I think larger firms will be looking at technology with a very wary eye. I think for a firm sort of our size, and we're not small, but for a firm sort of our size, technology offers a real opportunity to expand the work that we do and expand the skills that we have. Whereas for a, you know, let's call it a big four or someone in the top 10 or 20, it's difficult to imagine how you things like AI without that having a very serious impact on the number of bodies that you need. It could very conceivably have a serious impact on your top line revenue, even if it means bottom line profit growth. But they're difficult and challenging messages to get out to a workforce of 10,000 people.
Yeah, I get that. And digital, it's transforming the way accountants are doing business. How good are you adopting the digital and making it work for the client?
Like I imagine every firm, or at least every firm should admit to, there is more that we can do. I wouldn't necessarily call us edge at the moment, but one of the things that I love about this firm is the fact that it has an eye on the horizon. A lot of that comes back to the fact that we have a CEO and a COO who are non-client facing, which means their job is to keep an eye on the horizon. If Emma and Graham were literally 100% chargeable and managing the firm becomes part of the night job, then the problem they have there is the night job doesn't get done in the same detail that it needs to get.
So how does being a tech-savvy firm enable you to service the client better?
Well, I'm a big believer that going forward, that a certain percentage of our work should be tech-driven. Now, I don't know whether that's going to be 10, 20 or 30% or even more perhaps, but we need to find the most efficient way to get work done that can be done by technology, because it frees up time for our team. And one of the things, the reason we want to free the time for our team up is to give them the opportunity to think about the client. At the moment, too much work is done just because a client instruction comes in, you have to get it done, it gets done, then you move on to the next one.
Yeah.
And Tony Crabb, I think, made an extremely good point at a workshop we were at recently where he said, we're in danger of creating a knowledge economy where no one's got the time to think.
Yeah, very good point.
And I think from my perspective, what we want our team to do is we want them to have the time in their day to be brilliant for the people who are prepared to pay for brilliance.
Yeah, that's a great quote.
Not every client is prepared to pay for brilliance, but that's fine. You know, that's about being managing your client base, which again is one of the very positive steps that we as a firm are taking.
Well, the whole thing about value is it's so subjective, isn't it? What's valuable to one client isn't to another.
Yeah, we're looking to move away from a simple hours times rate business. So we are starting to have those value conversations. And we had a very good example a week or two ago where we had a client, just in the conversation with the client, it came up that because of the project, they're going to go through some cash flow issues in the short term. And one of the ways that we are able to add some value for those guys is by offering some pricing options. So if we, for example, defer our invoicing, we might charge a certain price because it gives them a bit of space within their cash flow. And that's identifying the areas where the value we add isn't necessarily just about what we do. It's about how and the way we do it.
And it sounds like you struck a good balance between building a relationship with a client and doing the tech. And what I mean by that is often the technology takes you away from the client, doesn't it? It depersonalizes relationships.
And that for me is one of the biggest problems in the industry. Like I say, there are clients out there who will want an entirely tech-driven service, and that's absolutely fine, you know, and the right firm exists for those clients.
Yeah.
Same way that there are clients that want to buy their furniture from IKEA, and there are other people that want to have it handmade by an artisan.
Yeah.
That's absolutely fine. Both of those markets exist. As a business, you have to decide whether you want to be IKEA or whether you want to be, you know, a personal cabinet maker. Want to be closer to the personal cabinet makers than IKEA.
Yeah, I get that. Is there any aspect to the accounting profession that hasn't evolved as quickly as it could have?
There are several aspects, one of which we've just touched on, which is that movement away from purely technical competence and understanding the importance of the relationship. Do we as advisors understand what clients mean when they say they want their advisors to understand them or their business? It is about that personal contact. It is about that conversation. You can look at the numbers and understand what the numbers tell you, but the numbers only ever push you towards a better question, in my opinion.
That's good. With your BD role, Martin, how have you seen the way firms grow in business stand out change over recent years, if at all?
Well, obviously, from a growth perspective, acquisition and lateral moves, and I use the word fix in square brackets, because I do believe that they both represent a real challenge to the culture of the business. And one of the reasons why we've set on the growth path that we're on is the culture of the business is all important to us. But I think it's really important when you look at sort of your client relationship owners is getting those people to think about their clients as an individual business. So if we're making 20 grand a year from a particular client, your job as the relationship owner, I believe, is to open up the rest of the firm.
Yeah. Share of wallet, you mean?
Exactly. Yeah. What else does that client need? Making sure that we understand those client needs intimately, and then where can we help satisfy those needs within the firm?
Where do accountants struggle with that cross-selling conversation, Martin?
Again, it's not accountants, it's professionals in general.
Yeah.
They're trained to be experts. They're trained to know the answers, and they know the answers and they're experts in relatively niche areas. And actually, that whole cross-selling piece comes from asking better questions. And that's a move outside of the comfort zone for many. Mm-hmm. I'm a firm believer that we get paid to go to work, and it's not called play. So we should be outside our comfort zone.
What's the worst advice or doctrine you've seen being dispensed in the accounting world?
I was having a conversation last week about a firm, and the phrase squeeze the lemon was used. You know, about a firm is taking a very, well, let's call it pragmatic view of their clients and trying to literally squeeze every last dime of revenue out of them. I think the pursuit of revenue as the ultimate goal is a massive problem in across professional services. You can increase your top line relatively easily, but I struggle to believe that some of the tactics that this particular firm are looking to employ will increase profit over the medium term.
It's a very good point. I wonder what would happen if firms pursued relationship and value over profits and revenue.
Well, I'm a big believer in profit. We're not here for good of our health. I'm a big believer in us making a profit, and we should. Yeah. Our firm certainly believes that the way to make a profit, and the best and the most sustainable way to make a profit, is have a great relationship with our clients where they recognize the value that we add.
When I ask leaders in large firms, Martin, what the challenges are to growth, a lot of them say that it's getting the right people in to drive the growth forward and maintain the culture. Would that be the same for you?
Yeah, we have a huge challenge around recruitment. The reason that challenge is as big as it is because the primacy we put on our culture. With all due respect, we could probably go and recruit competent accountants relatively easily, but we want competent accountants that are going to buy into what we do. Competent accountants who are going to add to that culture, not to dilute it. And because that culture is so specific and so very creases, that's not an easy thing to do. Then you add on the fact that we're at Tunbridge Wells, I'm sure our recruitment life would get instantly easier if we're in the City of London, but we're not. This is where we are. This is the firm we have chosen to be. One of the challenges that represents is recruiting the right people. But the thing I will say is when you get it right, magic happens.
I can imagine. But how do you recruit for a fit on culture?
You put culture at the very forefront, what you're recruiting for. Like I say, once you've got your professional qualifications, we should be able to assume level of competence. Now, that's not to say that we will literally let people walk in with some certificates and get on with it. They obviously get tested, but our recruitment process is rigorous for a reason. And we want to make sure that we get the right recruits who believe what we believe. So we talk very openly during the recruitment process about culture of the business. And one of the reasons we do that is because turn some people away.
Yeah.
But the people that decide to stay will love it.
Yeah.
That's been our experience.
What makes a high performer in a good accounting firm?
Despite everything that I've said about assuming a level of competence. Clients should be able to assume a level of competence because we never do. The absolute bedrock, everything we do as an accountancy firm is being damn good accountants.
Yeah.
So that's number one. If we're talking about an 80-20 rule, that's the 80. Yeah.
Yeah.
But beyond that, it is about understanding your clients. For me, I think one of the most important things for an advisor or anyone who manages a client relationship in any field to have is curiosity. Yeah. You've got to want to know more about your client. You've got to care more. There's a saying in my world where no one cares about what you know until they know that you care.
Sure.
Yeah. And I think that is a fundamental tenet that the best people in the advisory world live by.
That makes sense. Crystal ball, Martin, what's coming up over the next few years for the accounting profession and specifically for Croesus?
For the accounting profession, I'll come back and I'll talk about technology again. I think that's the area that a lot of firms are struggling to get their brain around and struggling to get their brain around what it means, not just for the firm, but also for the people. So that is probably the primary thing that I think most firms need to think about as well. Croesus, we've got our own challenges on that front. We've certainly got a lot to think about and a lot more that we can be doing. But what's really exciting is we introduced very recently a new way of looking at our client relationships called Croesus Way. And it takes them through this sort of cyclical process where we're constantly looking at whether we're the right fit for them, whether they are the right fit for us, as well as delivering the job. And that's about taking a critical look at our client base and making sure we're working for the right clients and that the clients feel that we're the right advisors for them.
How do you let go of the wrong ones?
We do literally resign mandates. We're not shy about that. So we're very happy to have a conversation with the client and say, look, it doesn't feel right anymore. And that can be for a variety of reasons. It's not always about fees. Sometimes it's just not the right relationship. Sometimes the chemistry between us and them isn't quite on point. We've had clients that we've outgrown and we've had clients outgrow us. It's perfectly legitimate and a perfectly reasonable thing to happen. Is really positive about Croesus is that we are positively doing it as opposed to just letting it happen to us.
Yeah.
But literally letting clients make that decision about us. We're making that decision about them as well.
Mm.
So even when we talk on all of the speculative inquiries that come in via our website or on the phone, come through me. And the first thing we talk about is having a very robust client acceptance process. Not every client that knocks on our door gets invited through it.
Yeah, set the bar high.
Yeah, exactly. If we're going to be positive about resigning mandates from clients that we would consider to be in our tail of clients, then it makes no sense to replace them with more clients that we believe are going to be straight in the tail anyway.
True. And supposedly, revenue to the firm is not a factor in whether or not you let them go.
I won't say it's not a factor, but it's not the primary factor. It's not, certainly not the only factor. We do look at things like, what is that relationship like? There are financial numbers in there, but there is also some very subjective stuff. Like one of the ways of identifying what we call a sweet spot client is, can we get access to the owner? Because it's about putting together the business and the owner. It's getting access to the individual so that we can make sure that the business is working for them. And if we can't get access to that individual, then that starts to feel like not a sweet spot client for us.
You know? What other questions do you ask?
One of the greatest compliments we get in those sorts of conversations that we have is when a client turns around to us and says, no one's ever asked me that before. But we talk very openly with our clients and our prospects about things like exit. We're quite happy to ask if the client has a number in mind. Sometimes they do. Sometimes they have a time frame in mind. Both of those are perfectly legitimate ambition. By finding those things out, we can make sure that our advice is tailored to achieving what we call the client's bigger picture. So one way that we might determine that a client isn't necessarily right for us is someone who's not prepared to be very open about their ambitions and their goals or their hopes and dreams, either personally or for the business.
Yeah, great point. Martin, I've had a few chats with you now and you come across as someone that's very passionate about what they do. What do you love most about your role?
I love it when it works. I've worked for some brilliant firms, but no one's ever bought me. Yeah, people don't buy me. People buy the trust and the faith that they have in the professionals that I work with. And I love it when I get the opportunity to have a little bit of influence on that and improve the professionals that I work with, improve their ability to go and win work, to manage client relationships, to get that feedback from a client that says, wow, that was awesome. You know, so we did a client event last week and we took 50 people to a Ross Noble gig in Tunbridge Wells, which isn't perhaps your traditional kind of accountancy client event. And if you've ever seen Ross Noble live, he's very off the wall, frankly.
He's a comedian, isn't he? For people listening that don't know. Yeah.
But some of the feedback we got from clients about what a brilliant way to celebrate 150 years, as if that was so original. That was the best night I've had with a advisor forever. Just some of the feedback we've got is remarkable. But it's that personal connection where if you're, as an accountant, if you're sat next to your client and both of you are in tears laughing at a comedian on stage.
Yeah, brilliant.
You've moved your relationship on.
Well, what frustrates you about your job? There must be something.
I get frustrated by the status quo.
Right.
I get frustrated by the unwillingness to shake things up. And that's one of the reasons why I love it here at Creasy so much, is because, you know, the thing that characterizes this firm probably more than any other for me is being prepared to shake it up, prepared to do it differently. But most firms really struggle with that. And there are very good reasons for it. And I understand those reasons. But, you know, for example, I don't think I'd have ever got a Ross Noble client event off the ground at Ernst & Young or Clifford Chance, Thornton or Pinson Masons. I don't think I'd have managed to make that happen. They're all great firms that I've been at. But we're prepared to shake it up. And I think those are prepared to define what their future will be, particularly with, you know, the technology that's coming down the track, clients getting more demanding. As a firm, you need to set a course. And you need to sail that course, and you need to make sure that you get right behind it, and you need to take the clients that want to come with you on that journey.
Yeah. And as head of BD, Martin, how do you see your role there? What kind of a BD director are you?
I like to think of myself as a very pragmatic one. Don't get massively excited about branding project, you know, it's got to be the right shade of emerald green. But what I do get excited about is when we win. Excited about the money that we make from the clients who love what we do. And I get excited about the moments when someone in the team goes, I really understand why we ask that. I really understand that this is changing the nature of my relationship with this client. And those sorts of things are like gold dust.
And do you go out and win business yourself, or are you more of an enabler and a coach to help the other people win business?
I'd like to think of myself as both. I was out with a prospective client on Friday, actually, had a really interesting conversation about her big picture, which is around, she runs her own business. She's a serial entrepreneur, but her big picture is, you know what? I think I've made it when I've got a great big house with a great big staircase. Because when I was a child, I had a friend who had a house with a great big staircase. And it's kind of understanding that we can understand her a whole heap better than if we were to just look at firm's accounts, understand what she's trying to achieve, what her motivations are, a whole heap better by simply sitting there and saying, tell me about the business. So yeah, I go out and I speak to clients, and I love that side of my job. And I never get anything other than smarter and better at my job every time I do.
Come on, we like that. And what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given in your career, Martin?
Shake it up. Actually, yeah, it really was. And this a guy, Ernst & Young, way back in the day, who had quite a reputation as being a bit of a sort of maverick in the sales team.
Yeah.
But everyone sort of really admired him, but I'm not sure how many people felt that they could do what he did or do it in the way he did it. And I remember having a conversation with him and him telling me that it wasn't always like this. You don't just wake up on a Monday and do this. You have to try things, and some won't work, and then you try something else. And that might work. Listen to the good and let some of the bad go, because things are going to go wrong. That's life.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, shake it up, I think, is a solid piece of advice. And it's something that I would give to anyone in my position to have a lot of confidence in your firm to be able to do it.
Love that, Martin. Love your passion. Love your philosophies about working in a large firm and culture. If people want to find out more about Creasy's or have a conversation with you, how might they reach you?
Come find us at the website, creasys.co.uk. I am always talking to prospective clients or people that want to know more about the firm. Not just prospective clients, prospective people that are interested in joining. We've got like a huge range of people that they can come and have a chat to. I would advocate, this is an incredibly interesting place to come and do your work. This is a really exciting place in a relatively grey industry.
Well, Martin Bragg, that's been superb. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, Rob. It's been my pleasure.
You've been listening to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. For show notes on today's and other episodes, plus some great blogs and resources to help accountants lead, sell, and perform at the highest levels, go to bdacademy.pro. Until next time, have a fantastic day.